So God is telling us what he would like us to do on this day. And it has all to do with our soul. So if you're going to have your consciousness respond, how do you suppose you'd go about doing that? God is saying, I want your consciousness, your nefesh, your soul, to respond and answer, appearing before the feminine manifestation of my light, the adoptive mother who purifies, enlightens, and elevates. Isha is feminine light. How would you cause, what would you do if you wanted your soul, your consciousness, to answer Yahweh's invitation in this way? Well, think about consciousness a moment. What does consciousness represent? A soul, every animal has a soul. So you can identify what is unique about animals vis-a-vis plants that do not have souls. So if you want to know what does a soul equip an individual to do, look at the difference between animals and plants. Plants are pretty. Got nothing to get plants. You know, if you put a seed in the ground, it'll shoot up roots, and then it'll shoot up branches, and then the leaves on those branches. And, you know, that's what a plant does. Doesn't move. Well, the wind can blow it, but it's not moving on its own volition. You know, a plant sucks nutrients out of the ground and water out of the ground where it is. And so long as it has a source of sunlight, it converts sunlight through the process of photosynthesis into energy, uses it through its leaves. It's a very inventive form of life, mind you. I mean, I'm impressed with plants. God did a fine job when it comes to designing plants. But have you ever seen a plant analyze the environment and say, okay, I see that there is a giraffe that wants to eat me, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to get the roots out of here. That I'm going to jump out of the way of this giraffe that's interested in eating me. No. Do you ever see a plant say, you know, that other spot over there, about 100 yards away, you know, it's closer to the stream, so what I think I need to do is mosey over there so I can get a good drink. You know, I noticed that there was an animal did its thing over here about 100 feet, and if I go over there, it'd be a good source of fertilizer one day. The plants observe and respond to their environment. No. Do animals? Absolutely. If an animal senses, observes a threat, they'll move out of the way of the threat. If the animal observes something that could be beneficial, they'll respond. So this nefesh soul or consciousness that animals have, that plants do not have, gives animals, of which we humans are an animal, the capacity to observe and respond. It's that mechanism, the ability to observe and to respond. So, when Yahweh is encouraging us, and your soul should respond, well, the first thing we need to do is observe what he's offering. He's offering us a day to reconcile our relationship. It's called Yom Kippurim, the Day of Reconciliations. He's offering us an invitation, a kara, to meet. So, we have so much information here. He's now saying, observe it and respond with your soul, which means with your awareness. There's nothing to do in the sense of, boy, I better have a script. What's the script? What do I need to do today? There's nothing to do in that regard. It's to acknowledge, to be aware of, to respond in a way that's in the best interest of your soul, vis-a-vis what you have observed, particularly regarding this invitation to meet with God. And what God is saying, the best way for you to facilitate that is for your soul to come into the presence of, to be present with, to appear before, to approach the set-apart spirit, the feminine manifestation of God's light. Why? Because when we do that, our soul is enveloped in our spiritual mother's garment of light, which makes us appear perfect. Where there is light, there is no darkness. Our flaws are obliterated, because flaws represent darkness, and darkness does not exist where there is light. We're enlightened. We're empowered. Those are things that light does. It enables us to see and therefore to observe more effectively. This is how we are empowered. This is how we're enriched. This is how we're elevated. This is how we're purified. All of these things happen because we come into the presence of Yahweh's set-apart spirit and her light. And then he says that us responding and approaching the feminine manifestation of his light in this way enables us to approach Yahweh. This is our ticket. This is the means to La Yahweh, to come into the presence of, to approach, to be near Yahweh. Now, there is no question that Nefesh was used to identify our mortal souls. But with Ana, we have a variety of viable options. Our soul can answer a call. They can respond to a summons by replying and making a declaration, all of which would be wholly consistent with this context of being invited to meet with God. Or they can be afflicted, disturbed, oppressed in a state of anxiety or distress, bending down and being miserable and wretched, being raped and violated in humility, which would be possible, although not advantageous and wholly out of context with this discussion, this invitation, if he was speaking of a physical body, but he's not, he's speaking of a soul. Now, the third option is akin to the first. Our souls can be concerned, which is to be engaged in deep thought. Our fourth consideration can be derived from the Hebrew lexicons, is that our souls can sing, vocally communicating with God. Rendered the same way in the text, Ona conveys the idea of living together in a marriage. Now, regarding Ana, those of you who have spent time reading the Introduction to God, it's introtogod.org, you know that I've endeavored to share all of the potential meanings of Ana, both positive and negative, and I've done so on several occasions. But for those who are listening to this program who have not read it, you should know that on the godly side of the equation for Ana, its primary meaning is to answer, especially a call. Two, to respond, especially to a summons. Three, to testify, speaking as a witness. Four, to think, being especially thoughtful and concerned. Five, to ask questions. Six, to receive answers. Seven, to speak truthfully, providing accurate information. Eight, to reply by making a declaration. Nine, to sing or shout, verbally communicating. 10, to live together in a marriage, consummating it. But on the dark side of the ledger, we discover that Ana conveys, 1, to be preoccupied, 2, to afflict or to be afflicted, 3, to be put down, 4, to be depressed, 5, to be cast down, 6, to stoop or to bow down. 7, to humble oneself. 8, to be humiliated. 9, to be disturbed and worried, feeling anxious. 10, to be raped and violated, especially in the context of demeaning and degrading women. 11, to become weaker, ultimately ceasing to exist. 12, to deny oneself. 13, to be silenced. And 14, to oppress or be oppressed. Now, how the dark implications of Ana can be used in the context of an invitation to reconcile one's relationship with Yahweh, you'll have to ask religious scholars, because that's what they've all universally chosen. How that is remotely possible and how that can be accomplished in concert with one's soul? Don't ask me. I can't get there. I can't make that work under any circumstances. Inconsistent with this context, inconsistent with Yahweh's nature, has nothing to do with reconciliation. I'm sorry. I think they're out on a limb that they themselves have created that has no basis in reality. If we were to generalize and summarize here a bit, there are five potential ways to translate Anah, four of which are similar and consistent with the theme of reconciliation and of being invited to meet with God, and one which is dramatically opposed to it. The choice seems so obvious, it's appalling to me, hopefully to you, that every English Bible translation selected the lone variation that conflicts with God's purpose and nature, as well as the words that he is sharing on this occasion. So knowing Yah, I'm confident he said, "Your soul shall respond and answer, Anah," should reply to the summons, making a declaration after engaging in thought, vocally communicating. Now moving on to the third word. Karab means to draw near, coming into the presence of a judge in response to a summons. It serves to confirm our rendering of Anah as shall respond. But some Hebrew dictionaries suggest that a secondary meaning of Karab could include presenting an offering. Yet since there is no suggestion of making an offering in the word's etymological roots, this definition is the result of clerics simply trying to justify existing translations and prior religious interpretations. Now, up to this point, translating the passage has been relatively straightforward. All I've had to do is present the primary meaning of each word. It is immediately obvious that Yahweh intended to convey, with his choice of words, that a nephesh soul, Anah, should respond and answer, and Karab appear before and approach. The most literal rendering of each word is sufficient to understand the intended meaning. But to make sense of what follows, we must think our way through the process. And that's what we'll do when we return. So far, Yahweh has said, your soul, your nephesh, should respond and answer, should reply to the summons, making a declaration and engaging in thought, appearing before and approaching Karab, drawing near and being present with the. Now it's the Isha. Now, fortunately, we've confronted the next term before in Yahweh's presentation of the Mikra. As we discovered initially with regard to matzah on yeasted bread, and then again with teruah, Isha, whether it's transliterated Ishe or Isha, is almost always translated burnt offering or an offering made by fire in English Bibles, because this term is indistinguishable in the text from the feminine noun for fire. However, neither Ishe nor Eshe has an etymological connection with any Hebrew word even remotely associated with making an offering. And when you think of the Day of Reconciliations, it follows Yahweh making the offering. It's Yahweh who made the offering. Yahweh offered himself up as the Passover lamb. Yahweh allowed his soul to go to the place of separation, to Sheol, to cause us to be exonerated. It's Yahweh who led the way with firstborn children, with Bakutim, paving the way for us being adopted, our soul being enveloped in his spirit, spirit and soul unified so that we could be adopted into his covenant family. It's Yahweh who facilitated Shavuah, where we're enriched and empowered. All of these things he did. He made the offering. It's not us. We're the beneficiaries. So it makes no sense that we would make an offering What are we going to offer God? I mean, the only thing we can offer God is our friendship. That's all we can offer. Our willingness to desire, really, to engage with him, to listen to him, to explore with him, be part of his family. We don't offer God anything other than that. So, as we think of this, we recognize that it can't be making an offering because there is no etymological association between isha and offering. Fire, however, is used throughout the Torah as a metaphor for judgment, for the separation of good and bad. It represents purification in the sense that gold is separated from the dross in a crucible. Fire is symbolic of light and enlightenment, and it conveys the notions of warmth and comfort. And with regard to the mikre, fire is used to express the idea of something which elevates and uplifts, a reference to the primary direction a fire smoke and energy travel. But of course, there's more to isha than this. Based upon the consonant text, the word Yahweh selected could just as easily have been isha, meaning a female individual, a wife, a woman, and non-biological adoptive mother. Other than context, there is literally no way to distinguish between E-S-E-H and I-S-E-H in the Torah, because the Hebrew letters which comprise both words are identical. Now, these things known, it makes no sense to appear before and approach a feminine fire or a human wife or woman in the context of a mikra dedicated to reconciliation with God. So rather than investigate what isha and esau might actually mean in this context, most translators changed karab to present, and they rendered isha as an offering made by fire, even though there is no support for offering or made in the Hebrew word. Yet, when we convey the full meaning of isha in a manner consistent with forgiveness and in the context of your soul should respond, appearing before and approaching, being present with the, it becomes obvious that isha was used to convey the purpose of Yahweh's spirit vis-a-vis our soul. So, Yahweh's set-apart spirit is our adoptive mother. Those of us who are born anew from above have experienced this because of her involvement in our lives with our soul. According to Yahweh, she covers us in a garment of light that makes us appear perfect in Yahweh's eyes. She purifies us. She nurtures us. She comforts us. She enlightens us. She protects us. She empowers us. She acts as our advocate before God. The set-apart spirit not only embodies every metaphor associated with fire in Scripture, her primary function is to provide us with access to our Heavenly Father. Those who do not respond to the offer of the set-apart spirit are disqualified for being in Yahweh's presence. Because to come to God, to become his child, we must be born anew spiritually. And the only way to accomplish that is through the set-apart spirit. Also, keep in mind that the Hebrew word, as I've shared with you previously, and we'll share again, ruach, which is the Hebrew word for spirit. The only Hebrew word for spirit. There's only one. It's ruach. It's feminine. And the spirit's responsibilities are all maternal. So by further confirmation, isha means to make relations friendly. Feminine noun, the principal function of the spirit and central ingredient to reconciliation is to isha, to make relations friendly. Incidentally, for those who may be uncomfortable with Yahweh having a paternal as well as maternal nature, contemplate why he said in the first book of the Torah, in Bereshith Genesis 1:27, so God created Adam in his image. Teslem, resemblance, pattern, and model. In the image of God, he created him, male and female. He created them. Now, in our quest to ascertain Yahweh's definition of Isha, let's consider another translation of Kara, Leviticus 23:27. This time from an English Standard interlinear. By so doing, we'll be more familiar with the variations that currently exist and be better able to appreciate the challenges that others have encountered. It shall be for you a time of holy convocation, and you shall afflict yourselves and present a food offering to the Lord. Whoa, God, it almost turns my stomach. And it's just so wrong. Wow. There is no basis for time of. There's no basis for holy. There's no basis for convocation. There's only a very twisted and obscure basis out of context for afflict. There's no basis for yourselves. There's no basis for present, for food, for offering. And there's no reference to Lord. That's how much they got wrong. And the English Standard interlinear would consider itself a literal translation of Yahweh's testimony. Let's examine Isha, written Aleph Shen He. Now, consider the words here. Aleph is the first letter of the Hebrew alphabet. It is drawn in the shape of a ram's horn. It means to have power, to have influence, to lead. It's the first letter in Father, first letter in God, El and Ab. The next letter is a shin. The Hebrew letter shin was drawn in the form of two teeth. It was symbolic of communicating via words and of nurturing. So to communicate through the meaning of words and to nurture. The last letter is the Hebrew he, depicted as a individual standing up. Now, when it's at the end of a word, the he conveys feminine. And so this would be a woman standing up. Reaching up. Reaching out, if you will. Paying attention. So we have a pretty good definition of the concept of Isha just in the Hebrew letters. Power, authority, word, nurture, to stand up, to be a feminine individual who takes a stand, who reaches up, reaches out. All of that tells us a lot about our set apart and spiritual mother. Now, more closely, as we consider this, as we have learned, Isha is most commonly translated, wrongly translated, an offering made by fire, or burnt offering. And that is because it is based on Ishe, the feminine word for fire, which is also rendered in the text, Aleph Shin He. That said, as you are now aware, the transition from fire to burnt offering is wholly religious and arbitrary. It's unsubstantiated linguistically, and therefore is a product of human religious tradition. Further, we know that Isha is most always translated wife, female, or woman. It can also mean adoptive, non-biological mother and bride. It is the feminine version of Ish, which describes a male individual. Yahweh referred to himself and to his associates as Ish, in his meeting with Abraham. Yosha calls himself an Ish during Jacob's transition to Yisrael. Ish is the basis, the first word in the compound of Israel, meaning individual who engages and endures with God. When we search the word, we discover that every iteration of Isha in Scripture is found in the Torah and no place else. Isha's first use is in Shemot, Exodus 29:18, while it appears again in Shemot 29:25, 29:41, and 30:20, Yahweh usually defines his terms in their first application. For those interested in searching every instance, however, of Isha, most are found in Korah, Leviticus. For example, 2:11, 2:16, 3:3, 3:9, 3:11, 3:14, 3:16. You'll find Isha again in Korah later in the book, 22:22, 22:27. And then throughout the Mikre discussion, which is found in 23:8, and that would be regarding the Mikre of Matzah, 23:13, and now we're talking about the Mikre of Teruah, 23:25 and 23:27, as we begin to speak about the Mikre, the invitation to be meet with God of Yom Kippurim, the Day of Reconciliations. It is rendered twice in 23:26 and 23:37. Variations are found beginning in Kara 1:9, 23:18, and 24:9. Very common word used only in the Torah. Turning to the first use of the word in Shemot 29:18, we find Katar being used to convey the burning of an Eil, a male sacrificial lamb, which Olah rises up to Yahuwah. Olah is the most common Hebrew word used to convey a burnt offering. The fact that it is deployed 286 times in this context to convey this specific thought is one of the reasons why I was unwilling to render Ishe exactly the same way. God is a perfectly good word to describe the nature of an offering, which is burnt and thus rises. And that word is Olah, not Ishe. To fully appreciate the meaning of Ishe in Shemot 29:18, let's consider its use in the context of the whole verse. God says, Katar, burn, rendering as smoke, the entire coal, lamb, Eil, the perfect sacrificial ram, on the altar. It rises up, Olah, toward, to approach, La, Yahweh. As the spirit of soothing acceptance, Riach, as a pleasant and acceptable aroma based on the Hebrew word Ruach, spirit. The adoptive mother who purifies, enlightens, and elevates, the feminine manifestation of God's light, Isha, serves as a counselor, conciliating and reconciling Nihoa, bringing acceptance, resolving and settling all outstanding issues between us to approach Yahweh. So here, when the word is first used, this is the first occasion of Isha, Yahweh uses words that are perfectly suited for burn, rendering as smoke, Eil, lamb, speaking of the purpose of the sacrificial lamb that serves as Passover, on the altar. It rises up, Olah. That's the word for burnt offering. It rises up and elevates. It's from Allah, which means to ascend, to approach Yahweh. And then he's going to describe the Isha with, she is the spirit of soothing acceptance, the Reach. She is the feminine manifestation of the light, the adoptive mother who enlightens and elevates, Isha, serving as a counselor to reconcile. This is from Nioa, unto and to approach Yahweh. It's clear. All you have to do is a little homework, do a little research. I mean, didn't we jump aboard this ark, this ship, this sailboat of ours, and push off the dock for the express purpose of exploring? And since our journey is through words to meet God himself, doesn't it make sense that we examine what the words mean? And that the best way to understand a subsequent use of a word is to look at its initial deployment? You know, if we're going to understand the life on a new island that we go off and explore, ought we not first come to understand the life on from the very place that we are departing? This is how you learn. Now, I've shared this lots of times, that translating Yahweh's testimony, coming to understand the meaning of the words that he chose, is a process whereby it is essential that you first understand who Yahweh is, that you come to appreciate his nature, what he wants, what he's offering, that you come to understand his plan, his covenant, and that you render each word in consistent manner with who he is and what he's offering. That's as clear as words would allow. A definition of Isha. If we're willing to invest the time, if we're willing to examine, to use our nefesh soul to observe what's around us and respond to what we see, it's not difficult to understand what God has to say. And one of the things I'm trying to share, and I do this a lot on our Friday evening program, and we'll have our Shabbat program. It's called Yada Yah Radio. It's a blog talk radio, and we'll host a program devoted to Yom Kippurim this evening, starting at 7:30 Eastern Standard Time. You're invited to listen. But as I do on that program a lot, I take the time out to say, what I've said on this program, I'm nobody special. I don't claim to be a scholar. I don't claim to be a great translator. What I claim is that I know Yahweh. I know who he is. I know what he's like. I'm engaged in a relationship with him. I'm part of his family. I know him. I love him. I know his word. I love his word. I focus on the Torah, which means his teaching, and his covenant, which lies at the heart of his Torah. And so knowing who he is, knowing what he wants, knowing what he's offering, knowing what he asks of us if we wish to engage in this relationship with him, I choose to have all of my translations be consistent with what he has to say about himself and what he is providing as instruction and guidance to us. So that's my perspective. And so as a translator, I want to be true to the etymological meaning of the words. And if there's a word that isn't easily resolved, like Isha in this particular case, I'm always diligent to go to the first use of the word and then to examine whether or not there is a consistent application of that word throughout Yahweh's testimony. Always keeping an eye to the realization that you need to translate in context. We have been invited to meet with God on a day whereby our relationship is being reconciled. And in this regard, he's asking our soul to respond and to come into the presence of what is obvious is the set-apart spirit, the feminine nature of God's light, the spirit of soothing acceptance, the one who is the counselor, reconciling us so that we can approach God. It's easy. It's really not difficult. And it's fun. But I'm encouraging you to think, to you to set sail on your own through his testimony. Don't take my word for it. Go study it yourself. Do the investigation. It's one of the most enjoyable things you can possibly do. Certainly the most enriching. And see if you don't come to the same conclusions. So the only way for us to rise up and to be included in Yahweh's family is through reconciliation, through spiritual rebirth, courtesy of our spiritual mother. This is the profound meaning behind the second of Yahweh's seven instructions. Consider your father. your heavenly Father, and your mother, your spiritual mother, significant and worthy, so that your days will be prolonged in the land, the promised land, that Yahweh, your God, gives to you as a gift. So while I'm strongly encouraging you to do your own investigation, I've thoroughly considered all of the components, all of the nuances in the full context of this invitation and of Yahweh's nature as it relates to Kara 23:27. And with regards to a set apart day where we are invited to be called out and to meet with God himself, an invitation from God himself for the purpose of reconciling our relationship. I am confident that he said, and your soul should respond and answer, appearing before and approaching the feminine manifestation of the light, the adoptive mother who purifies, enlightens, and elevates so as to approach Yahweh. He's inviting you to come into his presence. That's what we have done on this day. That's what this day is all about. This day that we will celebrate as Yom Kippur. Will you join me? Will you come to meet Yahweh?